you're a CEO, you're a leader, but you're also quite a media persona. Your podcast show is called No Money Bad Dreams.
The name alone, you know, it's not a very corporate thing. The way that we speak on the podcast, I've always saw it as an extension of me. I had to work for everything that I have today. No Money But Dreams really is more a mindset. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you will always have dreams. You should always go out and chase them.
You're leading a team, you're building your personal brand. How do you balance that?
I think anyone can do it. As an entrepreneur or in the corporate world, very easily, because a lot of other people are not willing to put in that hard work.
Would you rather do something that you know exactly that this works, or would you explore a totally new path?
What is really important for me is action. You go with a gut feeling. I'm pushing towards ideas and opportunities that haven't been explored yet.
Hello, LinkedIn and YouTube, and this is a C-Suite Influence podcast where we interview regional leaders about their leadership styles, about their motivations, and about what makes them leaders as they are. And in this episode, we're talking to Tareq Shabib, who is the CEO of Capital.com. Capital.com is an award-winning app and an easy-to-use platform designed to make investing smarter, simpler, and more intuitive. And Tareq is also a co-host of an amazing podcast, which is called No Money But Dreams. Welcome, Tareq.
Thank you.
And great to have you at the studio. And I'll give you all the stage to introduce yourself, please. How are you this morning, by the way?
Thanks for the introduction. I'll give you a little bit of a rundown of how I became a C-suite executive. I grew up in Germany. I'm half German, half Syrian. I did my studies there. And then once I finished my A-levels, I moved to the UK. I started studying, did my bachelor's and master's there, got my first couple of jobs. And then I had an opportunity to come out here to the Middle East. And 2015 was my first kind of managerial job here. And then for 2 years, the first 2 years, I worked 3-4 different jobs in the same company, tried to learn as much as possible. And then at the age of 32, I got my first chance to become a regional CEO. And yeah, now it's been 5-6 years where I'm trying to lead teams and trying to have an impact. That's my little 2-minute story.
That's nice. And I think also a good reason for us to talk on the C-Suite Influence podcast as well, because you are combining absolutely brilliantly, I think, two roles. You're a CEO, you're a leader, but you're also quite a media persona, because I'm following you on LinkedIn, right? You guys, you've got your own podcast show. So I think the combination of these two roles is really impressive, and I want to discuss all this. So maybe we can start with your podcast show. So your podcast show is called No Money Bad Dreams. How did you come to that? What is this podcast for? And did you start it from the moment when you were already a CEO? Just tell me about this journey.
Yeah, so No Money But Dreams really is more a mindset. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you will always have dreams. You should always go out and chase them, right? And that doesn't mean you need money to be able to chase your dreams. And that's really a representation of how I am here today. Mm-hmm. I don't come from a very well-connected background. I had to work for everything that I have today. And that's how we came up with the name. And, you know, being in the Middle East, I've had many different ventures. Whilst always staying in corporate, I always had side hustles that I tried to develop and had dreams for.
Yeah.
And one of them was with my friend Alex, who I own burger shops with. And at some point, you know, we were spending so much time together outside of work. And we were discussing so many different things, dreams and operational stuff and all the things that you discuss when you have a venture together. And we thought, it makes sense to put this in front of camera and record a podcast together. We initially were very engaged in preparing every show, and, you know, because I've known the guy for 10, 12 years, it's very easy to talk to him. We have a very similar mindset when it comes to business. He is very strong on the media front. He has gone from creating a advantage for his burger shops and That's to right. stand out in front of thousands of burger shops to then create a personal media brand for himself and repeat that process in a completely different way. So he's very good on that. I bring some of the business aspect into it. So we vibe on that kind of side.
Absolutely, yeah. I absolutely love the brand Nomadi by Dreams. But can you tell me, so some of the dreams will probably end up with money, right? So when it comes to investment and businesses, I think, what was your biggest, what was your deepest and biggest finding or an insight that you generated over these conversations with Alex or probably in the season when you invite guests?
You can go very deep very quickly, and you need to forget about the camera. You need to forget about all of this. So you need a couple of repetitions in to get used to the whole environment. But then you're just having a conversation with a friend, right? And if you're not shy away from going deep and discussing things in detail and revealing some of your personality and not just, you know, using a lot of floskels that you're not really saying anything.
Yeah.
Then you can have a very fun conversation and people can relate to this. And I think that's why the people that continue to listen to us, they can relate to this because they feel like there's two friends talking and I'm just listening in, right? So I think, and when you think about No Money But Dreams, we have been going for 2 years now.
Yeah.
We've created a little brand. There have been ups and downs where we stopped recording for a bit. Then we brought the second season in. We changed the format from just me and him talking to now also inviting guests. And I've always started posting things on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it was just the long episodes. Then we cut them down into reels and I post some of those. And, you know, a lot of people in leadership positions in the corporate world kind of shy away from creating their own personal brand and putting videos out there. I'm very much in the opposite direction. I don't shy away from any of this. I actually think it's very beneficial. And if you look at what we have, surprisingly, people from New York to Singapore to all sorts of places listen to the show. I've had people in interviews come to me for my corporate job where I want to recruit someone and say, I applied because I heard you say this and this in your podcast as part of their research to the interview, but I really want to work for you or with you because I really think this is the right way of doing things, which obviously when we started the podcast, we never thought about that any of this would really be there. I got invited onto other podcasts, given talks and all sorts of stuff like this. So you don't know where this journey takes you, but it's a very interesting journey if you're open to receive and open to just share your knowledge.
Is it difficult or easier to combine building your media brand, hosting something like a podcast, thinking about your content constantly with a leader's position, with the CEO position as your job currently? So you're leading a team, you're building your personal brand on a professional channel. How do you balance that?
I think one thing that's really important is that you don't become someone else. Right? I mean, people will see through this very, very quickly. The stuff that I say in front of camera, I would say to anyone to their face as well. Like, I'm not trying to be a different persona. That's just me, right? And I feel like a lot of people care what their superiors think or what their colleagues think. I'm not so bothered, right? And if you free yourself from that and you're just having a conversation, you know, then I think anyone can do it. anyone that got to a C-level position has to give presentations, has to motivate the team. You know, that's by default. That's part of your job. So why would you then say, no, I'm not going to go in front of camera, right?
Was there a moment when you decided to do that? Or was it something that belonged to you from, you know, from the start of your career? Like, was it something natural for you to do? Or was it something that you learned how to do?
I think earlier, and I never had a problem speaking in front of people.
Yeah.
That was never an issue. Speaking in front of the camera, I had to do a lot of learning. At the beginning, yeah, at the beginning, it doesn't come natural.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're talking into the camera, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at you. There's no camera around me. I don't care about that. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking into a camera and you do a promotional video or something like that, you need to spend some time. It's a skill, right? You learn it just like any other skill. But it's a lot less difficult than what people think about in their mind when they're not doing it, right?
Yeah.
So once you take the decision that you want to do this, just go for it, practice it like anything else, and don't set your expectations so high. When you set yourself really high expectations, you can only fall from grace, right? It's much easier to just build repetitions and not care about the numbers, don't care about how many people are listening, and just keep showing up. And by showing up, something will happen.
So what were the most interesting topics that you discussed with Alex on the podcast?
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of them. I still think back to the first episode, mm-hmm. which is called Bigger Carrot.
Right.
Where basically we talk about there's always someone that presents you with a bigger carrot. When you're in a corporate environment, you know, you get a promotion, you get shown a bigger carrot. Or, you know, you want to progress, there's a bigger carrot. I really loved our discussion there. Then one of the latest ones, we talked about going hard. And that is kind of like going against the grain of, you know, having everything easy out there today where we're ordering food, we're ordering from the supermarket, everything yeah. comes to you instead of you going out, sweating, hard work to achieve something.
Yeah.
And both me and Alex are from the kind of generation of wanting to go out there and taking your luck into your own hands and going hard and against the grain and really working for something. And that is a characteristic that, that is not in everyone, and it should be cultivated by everyone, because when you say, you know, I'm going to give it my all, I'm going to really work hard, you can rise to the top, whether it's as an entrepreneur or in the corporate world, very easily, because a lot of other people are not willing to put in that hard work over extended periods of time.
For
you
sure.
know? So yeah, that's just two of them.
I think it's a great example of how you positioned how you shared your philosophy on going hard was about your bet with Alex.
Yeah,
can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so last year I got sick and tired of not being in shape. I have a past of I made it into a professional basketball team in Germany, into the Bundesliga. So I used to work out a lot, and then, you know, work starts, you sit behind a computer, I've got kids, so priorities change.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in shape. I tried to get, until the age of 25, I always had a six pack. Then I lost it. And basically for 8-9 years, I tried to get it back, tried 4 or 5 times, failed every single time. And I thought, I need to do something drastic to kind of get it back again. And so I bet him $50,000.
That's a lot.
But not just that. I wired him the $50,000. And I said, you get to keep it unless I achieve my six pack in 90 days. And for me, you know, $50,000 is material. I don't just want to, especially not give it to Alex. He would have probably bought himself a car or a watch or something.
Rent yes. an expensive car, I guess.
Yes. I decided there's no way I'm not going to get that money back. I worked out 100 days straight. I watched my diet. I achieved my goal. And it just has something to do with motivation. And when you put it out there, it was very public, you don't want to fail. And yeah, it did something to my brain, and it wasn't even like a chore. Like, I didn't feel like I was looking. I only worked out for an hour a day. Like, I didn't do anything crazy. I still have my full-time job. I still have a lot of other responsibilities, but I made a priority. And when you make something a priority in your life, it's crazy to see how much you can achieve in such a short period of time.
Absolutely. I think it's just a public manifestation, right, that made, and also definitely supported by $50,000 of your own. That was actually strength in your commitment, right?
It's funny. Like, some people say, you know, just be quiet and achieve your goals and don't talk about them. And that's one way of looking at it, right? I'm kind of the opposite. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mind talking about something and then putting my neck on the line and for everyone to see and know what you're up to. And if you don't achieve it, you don't achieve it. But, you know, there's something that makes you work hard, because no one wants to look foolish, right? So for me, it's the other way around. I don't mind putting myself out.
No, I love it. And I think it's braveness. Frankly, when you're going out there on LinkedIn and... You're being quite informal in, manifest like that. But at the same time, you know how to bind it back to your professional profile. I think it's, first of all, it's braveness, it's an art, and it's purely like getting out of the comfort zone, right?
So I mean, LinkedIn is a funny social media platform for people that are in the corporate world, right? Because you've got your superiors that you're probably connected to, you've got your colleagues, you've got your past colleagues, and everyone is looking at you, right? Yeah. People are nosy. Yes, they're looking for a new job, but when you look at the LinkedIn feed, not a lot of people put very personal stuff out there, because some are afraid that will have an impact on their career progression or on what colleagues think, and, you know, then what will the conversation at the water cooler look like, you know, all that kind of stuff. And when we started the podcast called No Money But Dreams, mm-hmm. the name alone, you know, is not a very corporate thing. And the way that we speak on the podcast, I've always just saw it as an extension of me. And if someone has a problem with me or what I represent, then there's no point in me working with that person anyways. So I am less afraid of putting stuff. Now we do a lot of reels, and when I promote an episode, I put a reel on, and some people like it. Some people talk behind my back, and I really couldn't care less.
That's great.
The thing is, you want to create a brand, and that's part of my brand. And LinkedIn is a good medium to actually get exposure, because not a lot of people are posting things, especially personal things. So if you post something personal and people can relate to it, there's a lot of exposure that you can gain there.
I think you've just nailed a few really important things about the brand that you're creating online. Number one that I captured for myself, first of all, your identity is your brand.
Yes.
And once you're sure about your identity, there shouldn't be anything wrong with putting it out there, be it an informal or formal way. And if somebody doesn't like you, which means you do not fit each other anyway,
yep.
in work or in life, which is, I think, that's the formula. Once you know who you are and you know what's natural way for you to promote that, not necessarily promote, mm-hmm. but just you want people to see you as a whole, right? You want people to see you as a brand. And if you're a brand in your life, it's very easy to bring that brand out there in the media space.
Yeah, and I think, we're talking here about personal kind of branding, but I think on the corporate side, if you create a brand for your venture, that is just as valuable. You know, a lot of people don't invest enough into their corporate brands, right? And, you know, okay, we talked about burger shops. How can a burger shop differentiate themselves from 2,000 other burger shops? How can a fintech in a space that has another 50 ones just like them really differentiate themselves, right? So you can take that from a personal branding perspective, and I learned a lot on that side, mm-hmm. and bring it to your corporate life and think, okay, what can we create? Who are the right people? Like, funny enough, I'll tell you another story. You know, I started branding Capital here in the Middle East very heavily on the Arabic speaking side, right? Right. And the guy that is running that project started with me in sales. And at some point he wanted to quit and leave the company. And I said, you know, I like what you're doing. Okay, you may not be fit for that role, but what do you want to do? And he had a YouTube channel before. And I said, you know, why don't you do YouTube here for the company? And you like trading, why don't you do it? I need someone that does it. And ever since, this was almost 2 years ago now, we have branded Capital all over, very, very strong in that niche segment, because that's how it started, right? Mm-hmm. And then you take lessons from there and you apply it to your personal brand and vice versa. And that's that really created a unique selling point versus a lot of competition. And I think a lot more C-level execs should be thinking about, you know, how can I create a brand and leverage that on the corporate side as well.
Absolutely. I think it's about, first of all, it's about owning your conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also about differentiation, because you cannot have two the same conversations, for sure. If you are thinking about your identity and your brand's identity, and you start with your personality as a leader and you bind it back to your business or to your role you're doing because it's part of you, there wouldn't be two the same conversations, and that's how you differentiate yourself, right?
Yeah, I think the first point, owning the conversation, is such an important thing. People will always talk about you,
totally.
Right? Clients will talk about you, suppliers will talk about you. All of that will be happening anyways. And if you shy away to be part of that conversation or to frame the conversation, then a lot of stuff gets out there that is maybe not right. And you need to be ready for this, because there will be points where it's very public and people can comment on YouTube videos or whatever. And you have to engage with that, because just hiding as a big corporate isn't the right way either. But owning the conversation and leading that conversation and, you know, directing where you want it to go is a very, very important part of brand building as well.
Was there anybody who impacted you as a leader and your way of thinking towards, let's say, media brand branding, or in general, how you promote yourself and your business? Was there anyone who impacted you, or was it purely something that just needed a moment to open up?
No, I mean, everyone gets affected by their social media feeds, and I had a lot of Gary Vee on my social media feed. obviously, I have a business partner that is very much out there, mm-hmm. much more than me now, out there in the social media space. So I've always understood the power of it. I've maybe applied it more on the corporate way than on the personal side yet, but I definitely think that there were a number of different... I listened to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks as well. You know,
what are they? Just name some of them. Yeah,
Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett has... I've listened to a lot of them.
What do you like? Why do you like it? Does it help you in your everyday life? Does it help you in your... in the way you lead team, or in the way you build your brand?
I listen with two ears. One is for the content, and two is how does he construct the questions and how does he make it so engaging, so emotional for the listener to listen to, want to listen to the next one, right? He has really perfected this in terms of scripts and how he is asking the questions from the childhood onwards, and then gets into deep topics with people to reveal emotions, right? Because if you have a conversation where there's no emotional connection for the listener, they're unlikely to return back, right? So I really learned something there. Then Invest Like the Best. This is more on a financial side, and listening to the backstories of interesting businesses that are being built. And then Alex Hormozi from a more... I actually listened to his book first, $100 Million Offers. And after I listened to that, and that was really interesting, I then started dibbling and dabbling in his podcast. And they do a lot of marketing stuff. Gary Vee, I didn't actually listen much on a podcast side, but it's more like the 1-minute videos, the... he's on every platform.
He is. It's very difficult to escape from that content, but it's also quite... He gives a lot of great reminders.
Yes.
Even if you don't want to go deep into it, but the reminders are really timely, and I think that his focus is...
Yeah, and his understanding of platforms like TikTok, you know, go totally. And produce 5 pieces of content every single day, go on TikTok Live. He speaks to so many different people, whether it's artists or companies, where you can always take something away, right? So that has kind of like replaced my morning commutes or wherever I'm driving. I'm usually listening to them. That's... A lot of it is entertainment and some of it is learning. And then audiobooks, same thing. You go a little bit deeper into some topics. But it's just such an easy way to consume content that where you're actually alert, you know? Yeah. It's not like when you're reading a book, it's so much more effort. You know, you have to sit down and you can't double down your time. And
I agree.
Podcasts are, just a great medium to spend some time with someone and learn everything that they know in a very short period of time.
I think we're just in a different era, right? There's still place for a normal book reading, but having all these podcasts and audiobooks saves you so much time, and you can listen. Definitely, you're not using your full attention mm-hmm. when you're listening in and you're driving, for example, mm-hmm. but it's still a way to consume a lot more content that we were able to consume that previously, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, let's say, if we're moving towards your leadership, let's say, position, so... Yeah. Was there any piece of leadership advice that you've ever received that you're still holding till now? And if it was, what was that?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a couple of points.
Yeah.
One is delegation is more important than anything else.
Right.
Yeah, so the higher you go up in any organization or the bigger your team becomes, the better you need to become at hiring the right talent and then delegating the work in the best way, because you can't do it all yourself. You probably started out as someone that was a contributor and a star in their contribution role. You need to really change your skill set and make sure that the people around you are really delivering what you need to achieve. And second leadership principle that I really have is team. I come from a basketball background. It's a team sport. Since I was little, it was always about the team. It doesn't matter how good your contribution is. It all depends what the team achieves as a collective. And I think that is something that in a corporate world or in any kind of work environment is just as true. And if you hire the wrong people into the team and they don't deliver, you know, it all has repercussions on the kind of outcome. So those two things, being a team player and really pushing team and getting different characters to work with each other, plus delegating and not getting into the nitty-gritty and understanding that if you're training someone, they may do it to 70-80% of what you could do, but that's still much better than if you need to spend your time doing it.
And are you working with a mentor, or if you were to choose any mentor in the world, who would that be from the leadership perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had mentors throughout my career. I think you need to find someone that gives you a chance early on in your career so that you can make some mistakes and learn along the way and develop that muscle of leading, right? So I definitely had that. I had mentors in sports, obviously, people that I admired, their work ethic. You know, people ask me, which team do you follow in basketball? And I usually answer, I follow this and this and this and this person mm-hmm. because I admire their work ethic. I admire how they apply themselves every single day, right? So you should go out and look for mentors and look for people that have achieved something that you haven't necessarily achieved yet. Whether this is, you know, even Alex at the beginning, I was investing in a number of different kind of businesses, and he was a mentor on how to make it from the corporate side onto the entrepreneurship side.
Oh, yeah. Right? I would definitely take his advice.
Yeah. No, but it's, you know, it's someone that has done something, started a company, grown that company that I hadn't done before. I had done it on the corporate side and internal kind of entrepreneurship, but not when you have full responsibility. So I learned a lot there. So I try and, or in sports even, when I got back into my journey, I tried to play tennis once a week with a guy that has been playing tennis since he was a little kid. And he's obviously much better than me. But surrounding yourself with people that are better in the sports world or more experienced in the corporate world, you can just feed off all their knowledge and be a sponge and learn so much for you to then apply that in your own life.
If there was a choice of any mentor in the world, like imagine a name that any mentor, anybody in this world could be your mentor, who would that be? Any specific name?
Look, I really admire in the finance world, in my world, you know, I admire Ray Dalio, you know, because he does a lot of very in-depth thinking on what has happened in the past and how that will affect the future now and helps him understand what is happening currently. So sitting down with someone like that has figured it out in the finance world, that would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. No, that's great. As a CEO, if you were to choose to lead a team of people who prioritize creativity or people who prioritize stability and operations, what would you choose?
Well, I've started 3 brands here in the Middle East. I'm definitely the guy that likes the environment of having chaos and no structure and just go and try and figure out a way. So my answer definitely has to be creativity. I thrive on creativity. I thrive when, you know, you need to find a way, you don't have a set path. And at the same time, I feel like I can't apply my whole self if there is a very rigid environment where, you know, you're in this box, you only do this, don't do anything else. You know, I'm not the best leader for those kind of teams. You know, if you think about huge brands like Amazon or something like this, you know, everyone comes and does one particular job, right? But because I've worked more in a startup environment, I'm more leaning towards the creativity part.
No, I love it because I think it's some people are just difficult to be put into one box. And I mean, box is probably not the right shape. I always say so. I mean, there's not enough shapes to put some people in because they've got so many aspects of themselves that they can use and bring in as a value into the business. In your leadership approach, do you set up ambitious long-term goals or do you prefer short-term wins that have an immediate impact?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest believer in 3 to 5 year goals. Mm-hmm. I think 12 months is the longest time period that I think people can actually plan for because so much changes all the time. And then I'm actually very fond of breaking down, okay, what are we going to achieve this quarter and next quarter? And then what are we going to do this month and what are we going to do this week? And so in that perspective, yes, a year maybe, but you have to really break this down into shorter time frames so that you can hold people accountable and then you can track whether you're achieving your goals or not, right? So yeah, that's my approach.
Interesting. What is the best leadership way to tell someone that his idea is not good?
You know, early on in my career, I ruffed a lot of people's feathers by, you know, being very stubborn on what I thought was the right way, going in this direction and that's it, right? And I couldn't believe why they couldn't see my point, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I wasn't good at articulating it, but what I've learned with the years and when you have more context to a situation is that sometimes the people that are talking to you, they may not have all the context that you have, right? And you may want to substantiate their view by giving them another angle or another 2 angles and say, hey, have you thought about this? What about this angle? And then they realize, oh, actually, I haven't thought about this. I should go back and, you know, refine my idea or add something to it to really work it out. So I think I wouldn't come out straight and say, hey, that's not a good idea, you know, because of this and this and this. I rather highlight the areas that I think they haven't considered yet to give them a chance to go back and come back with a more refined approach.
Interesting. Yeah. So probably it's not good or bad. It's not about being good or bad. Probably there's another aspect of the same idea that they haven't explored yet.
Yes.
Agree with you totally. In the moments of uncertainty, do you usually, would you rather go and do something that you believe in and you know exactly that this works, or would you explore a totally new path?
You know, I have a bias towards go.
Right.
It's always go, go, go. Mm-hmm. It's not so much, we need to think about this, we need to think about this. I'd rather go, and if it doesn't work out, we'll find another way. Right? So I'm not really answering your question here. But what is really important for me is action. Action is the most important thing. And then you can, because if you don't act fast enough, you're losing a lot of opportunities, right? So for me, that is the most important thing.
So basically, I guess in some moments, something you believe in will work, but sometime probably you will need to explore new paths, right?
You know, we talked about creativity. A lot of the things that I'm working towards haven't actually been explored. So there isn't actually a set, we have always done it this way, so we're going to do it this way. No, I'm pushing towards ideas and opportunities that haven't been explored yet. So you go with a gut feeling and you just try it out.
Right. One of the last questions, probably, do you make New Year's resolutions for you, for your company, for your brand? And if yes, then what it is for 2024?
Yeah, so as I alluded to it earlier, like I definitely set yearly goals in kind of on the corporate side of what we want to achieve. On a personal side, there have been years where there were New Year's resolutions, like the bet that I had with Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
But generally, I don't really believe in waiting until the 1st of Jan and then all of a sudden, magically, something happens. I think if you have an idea and you want to set yourself a goal, it doesn't matter whether you start on the 12th of September or on the 1st of Jan. If you want to achieve something, you want to achieve something, you're going to go after it. So I don't think people should hold themselves back and wait till January to start something. Just get started and go.
I agree. Yeah, totally. I like it. If your business was a TV show, what would it be? A comedy, a true crime? I don't know. A talk show. What would it be? If you imagine, or maybe you've got a specific brand to associate with.
You know, when we did No Money But Dreams at the beginning, there was this idea of kind of having a 24 hours recorded kind of follow in the life of day.
Like a live show.
Yeah, exactly. Like a live show, and actually show all the obstacles that are coming up throughout the day. Obviously, I work in a corporate environment. It's a little bit difficult to execute. But yeah, it would probably be something like this, where you're setting yourself a goal or you're trying to do a specific business and you let the community be part of it. I'm not really into reality TV kind of thing. It would be related towards business or something like this. I think that would be interesting because, you know, sometimes for me, it's difficult to look at people that have achieved a lot and then they all start writing a book or, you know, something like that after their success. I much rather would be interested in seeing how does
the
someone
journey.
Yeah, exactly, the journey. How do you get there? And even if someone fails at the end, the problem with this obviously is how do you get people to view it if they don't know that you're going to be successful or not.
I think we're living in the world where we want to see real things, considering things like AI.
Yes.
Considering that how many things can be fake nowadays, we're really longing for some reality show.
Yes.
Something that will be super life, supernatural.
I
mean, yes.
And you look at some of the platforms out there like TikTok and Instagram, the lives and what they're doing with lives. I mean, some people go online to just have lunch and 200 people watch them or 2,000 or whatever, right? And they're just having a conversation with their audience. And I think on the business side, you know, when you go on LinkedIn, you see the posts that are being liked, There's a lot of people that engage with posts where there's a problem or someone has had a success or something like this, right? So why couldn't you do this in video format where, you know, you're posting challenges, almost like a community that gets together and says, you know, I've got this and this challenge today. I'm thinking of solving it like this. What do you guys think? And then you just get so many more ideas and it's probably better on how you're tackling the problem. So yeah, I think one day I'll do that.
No, absolutely. What is the most unconventional business skill that you have and you're using or not using? Unconventional means like it doesn't seem to be business, but it really helps in business.
Yeah, growing up, I worked for my dad since the age of 12, and I really learned how to make money out of nothing.
Oh, so, really? Yeah. Give me an example.
He's got a skill. He has got a very service-based business, but he could sell his service in all sorts of different kind of ways, right? And I think that really helps me now in a corporate environment where I can always think of new ways of either attracting customers or creating a new revenue stream or reducing costs in a specific way. So a lot of it is about looking at different things that you know and piecing them together in a new kind of format. I think that is a skill that, not knowingly at the time, but after 10 years of practice, at some point it rubs off and it helps me now to go into new markets and think about how we can tackle them.
So it's more about then strategy, or is it more about the sales skill? So what is this? What is this ability? Is it the sales or a strategic vision, or is it something to engage a person in a conversation? So if we specify that skill.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It all starts with smelling money, smelling
that there is. Oh, got you.
You have this idea of you see a situation and you just think there's money to be made here, right?
Yeah.
How can we go after this? And that's usually how it starts. And then, I will speak to many different people to get their opinion. And at some point, some people may not agree with going down that route because they can't smell it in the same way that you can smell it, right? But for me, yeah, I just have to go after it and see whether it's really there or not. And if it's not there, it's fine. You move on to the next thing. But, if you try out 10 different ideas and three of them works, you know, it usually is a good end result.
I love it. I really like it, but I think the money conversation is something that we need to record in a separate conversation, totally. So thank you very much for being on the C-Suite Influence podcast. I think we've learned a lot from you today, Tarek. Thank you very much for sharing your story of the branding online, of how you share your content, and also the way you built your career here and in different countries. Great to have you on C-Suite Influence podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.